Honestly, though, the more that I look around the internet and consume the content that you put out, the more I think I gotta ask her about that. I gotta ask her about that. You know, one thing after another. I only just now came across some old whiteboard animations that you'd done and put on YouTube.
Oh my gosh, yes.
So even that, I'm like, well, shoot, really she's an little animator.
Yeah, all the fun stuff. I got all sorts of hobbies.
That's good though. I love that. That's part of it is that, like, Cedar, I thought to myself, like, well, it would be so fun to talk to this person anyway.
Having seen
a lot of, like, a lot of your music stuff was coming up in my various social media feeds and stuff, you know, a lot of whistle playing. And then I can't remember now if it was on Facebook or Instagram or maybe something else, but I saw this like bio description that was like vegan mermaid, earth lover, mountain unicyclist, musician, and more. I was like, okay,
yes.
I gotta talk to this person. What? We gotta talk about all of this. And we'll just talk about it in order. Trying to pick one, like, of course I want to talk to you about your music, but what's up with mountain unicycling? What is that? Where did that come from?
Yeah. So basically, it's a very young sport. It was only formed, I believe, in the 90s. Although unicycling has been around for about 100 years or more, mountain unicycling is quite new, and I hopefully can meet the actual, like, founders of mountain unicycling this summer, because I'm going to the Unicycle World Championships, which is known as Unicon, and that's being hosted in Minnesota in Bemidji this year. So basically, my friend in 2019, he got a unicycle, and he kind of rode it around a little bit, and then he discovered mountain unicycling.
Mm.
And I was like, oh my gosh, this is very interesting. And he let me try the unicycle. And of course, I got half a rotation. Like, your body doesn't know at all what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually it clicks. So it took me a week to be able to, like, consistently ride a little ways. But I started on, like, dirt roads and then eventually joined my friend on the trails. And that was so much fun. It's a mega challenge, and it kind of filters some people out because you will fail a lot.
Yeah.
Like, you'll have to dismount sometimes, or there's a lot of falling, but it's not as dangerous as mountain biking because it's, you know, not even nearly as fast. Because you have basically... it's a fixed gear unicycle, and so there are no gears, there's no suspension or any of that, and some don't even have brakes, so I started with one without brakes, but eventually, I was riding in the Yosemite area, so we had lots of technical trails and mountain biking trails, so we'd get lots of compliments and comments and some... Yeah, very interesting comments, but we would just love to do this. And eventually, I went to my first mountain unicycle weekend in Los Angeles, and I was one of only two female riders, and the rest, they were all guys. And that's not a problem. It's just so funny how it's mostly male-dominated. But they're such lovely people. Like, the whole community is so welcoming and encouraging to everyone who's starting and progressing as well.
I know nothing about it, of course, but I do. I assume that only lovely people would be drawn to competitive unicycling. So that makes sense.
There aren't many big egos or anything. I haven't even come across that at all. They're all just so sweet. And so at that Muni weekend, it was so much fun. And there was also, like, a little pool party and a barbecue. And we had, like, a few days of intense riding, and we would just make our way down the trails and session certain areas. And in 2020, my friend and I hosted the California Muni weekend, even though it was lockdown. We still had, I think, 10 people come to our trails, and that was amazing. And just the people are so talented to watch these riders go down, like, really huge rocks with a 6-foot drop and land it is incredible. But that has been such a fun hobby. And unfortunately, over here, I haven't been able to do much Muni because the trail is kind of hard to access. But at least I can still rode unicycle. And I did a lot more of that since coming here. And so it's so much fun. And with all my hobbies, I try to overlap them. So I can ride and play whistle or flute at the same time. And for a limited time, because my breathing gets really thrown off. But yeah, that has been a major hit a few times. But it's, yeah, just so fun.
Well, that is one thing that I do really like a lot. I don't know. So I live in the western desert of the United States, and the Coco Pelli figure is something of a regional icon. And so seeing is it fair to say your logo or one of your logos as like this Coco Pelli looking character on a unicycle with a whistle? It just felt that's perfect. how delightful.
Yeah. Yes, that's my Cedar Dobson Music logo. I put it on my invoices as well, but that feels most like me.
That's perfect. You found the right one. Some of us search forever to find our emblem, right? And you really found it. And I love that the gathering is called Unicorn, too. Not unicorn, but so close to unicorn.
Yes.
Unicorn.
Yes, and there's actually a pretty famous unicyclist named the Unicycling Unicorn.
Oh, well, of course,
and
there is.
Yep, and he's based in Minnesota, so it's pretty funny that this is his hometown that the convention is going to. He rides around on a really tall unicycle with a fake unicorn that he puts over the saddle, and he performs for people and audiences all over, and he's wonderful. So yeah, if you look him up, he's the Unicycling Unicorn.
and of course, I don't mean to make this an interview only about unicycling, but how do brakes work on a unicycle? I didn't realize that was even an option, just because my impression was that you need to be able to pedal forward and backwards. So like, what's left?
So basically you have like a brake lever underneath the handle, and so basically it's like a bike brake but just positioned slightly differently, and you gently pull on it, and you can have disc brakes or rim brakes, and it'll slow you down that way. But if you don't have a brake, you use back pressure. So basically you kind of pedal backwards, or you resist all the forward motion by pushing the opposite direction, which takes a bit more effort, but it could be really effective. And so my road unicycle, I actually have commuted from where I am based in Templeogue to Ringsend on the busy Dublin roads. I've done that several times, and all times without a brake. And there have been times when I've had to slow down pretty quickly, but I just use back pressure and can go from quite fast to completely stopped in about 3 seconds or so.
Oh, yeah. That's not bad at all.
But it's a big wheel, so it takes a little more effort, but it can be quite a fast transition if you put the effort in. And so, yeah.
So if mountain unicycling is called Muni, then is the same rule applicable to anywhere that you're riding? So like, would gravel unicycling be Groony and road unicycling Rooney and et cetera?
That's a creative approach. Yeah, I'm Groony. That's a cool one. I don't know if I've heard that before.
Join the community. I need to go get my unicycle.
Yeah, for sure.
As long as we're taking the detour, what about the mermaiding? Is that also a regular activity?
Yeah, I'd love it to be a bit more regular, but over here in Dublin, for some reason, the pools are really scared of us, and like insurance wise.
Oh, I see.
They're quite afraid. Yeah.
I immediately was thinking of like a Cartoon Saloon a while ago did a great movie that had to do with Kelpies, you know, and I just was immediately thinking, is there like ensconced cultural aversion to anything too close to, you know, maybe there's old legends or something, you know, like, no mermaids at schools, they're just children, you know.
Yeah, it's actually surprising, because I did some research into like the mer people around the world and the history of them and mythology. And it seems like Ireland has the nicest mer people, and they're called Merrows. And they tend to not be as evil as sirens or anything.
Not as murdery as some of the others.
Yes. But yeah, it's weird because, like, insurance over here, they're so terrified of us hurting ourselves or other people, which is fair, but it can be very limiting, especially when the pools don't allow filming. So I'm not able to make much content at all at the moment, but we as a pod, we have about...
A pod. Of course it's called a pod.
Yeah. Yep. Merpod. Yeah. So we have, like, about 10 people, And we're basically trying to team up and tell the pools, like, we're PADI certified basic mermaids and we're working on our advanced course. So PADI is an actual diving organization that has mermaid courses so we can be safely trained.
I love these little windows into these worlds that I would not have thought that they were so complex and, you know, and developed.
Oh,
but
yeah,
they are.
For
wow.
sure. Yeah. Yeah. And so basically we're taught to be safe in our monothins and tails and to actually possibly help save people as well, and if they need that. And so, yeah, we have all sorts of training, and we can also be performers if we'd like, which we'd all love to do that at some point, but I just love it as a hobby, and I really enjoy swimming like a mermaid because of the action of it, because you feel less like a human and more like a creature. And so that's really fun, and I'm planning on doing some tin whistle mermaid combined videos in the summer, and some tune videos above the surface, and of course, like, it won't work underwater, but I could also dub in some music.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Get an extra echoey or something to get that kind of underwater effect. Yeah,
For sure. But that's a really fun hobby, and I'm going to do a lot more swimming when I visit home in July. But at the moment, we are working on getting a pool that would help, you know, the Merpod be more recognized and allow filming, which we might have a pool that would let us do that in Offaly, which is the Midlands. So we'll see, but it's another fun hobby of mine. I just, I really like unique, odd things.
How delightful. I never would have imagined, but now I've got this idea in my head of like a certified mermaid who can even save people. Okay, so like, how long will it be before we have just like official lifeguards wearing monofins, you know, sitting in the chair ready to dive in?
That would be so fun.
That you mentioned, you know, going back home to California and stuff. What is that like? I get the impression that you're kind of a Californian Irish person, like both.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in California near Yosemite National Park, and so I was very spoiled with going to the park often because my dad is a house painter and he can get into the park for free essentially because he's a contractor. So we've gone in several times, and it's just a work of art and nature. It's incredible. And I actually got to mermaid and unicycle in the valley floor area of Yosemite. So that was pretty amazing. And so basically I was born and raised there. And my family is very artistic and musical and creative. And they were always very encouraging for us to kind of discover what we love and how to express ourselves and all that. And so my mom's side of the family loves folk music, and they actually have, they had friends that had a barn, and they would go and play music at the barn, and I used to go over there when I was really little, and I kind of got interested in music because of them and my parents, and I used to play percussion a bit, and then eventually moved on to other instruments, but one thing I discovered is they played a couple Irish pieces, and some of them were O'Carolan pieces, and one tune stuck out to me in particular that I shockingly remembered the name of because I don't remember any tune names these days, and that was the Swallowtail Jig.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so basically I remembered that tune, and so growing up I had all the unique hobbies and interests, but music started to become the primary interest of mine, and I got this tin whistle at a Civil War reenactment, American Civil War of all places. Jinx. Yeah, and it was so random. And my school went as a field trip to this place, and it was just like 10 minutes before we had to go on the bus, and I went to one of the tents, and I saw this instrument, and I was like, that looks pretty cool and fun, and it was like $10. Bought it, and then on the bus drive home, I remembered this simple tune that I only am starting to hear again in sessions. It's actually a song. And I actually have a tin whistle here. Let's see. It goes. So it's like, that's part of it. And I remembered that, and I started to play that on the bus ride home. and kind of messed with that a little bit and the whistle. And that was 2012. And then I set it down completely and was busy with like whatever else I was doing at that time.
Unicycling, and... mermaiding, something.
Yeah, something. And then 2 years later, I heard the Last of the Mohicans soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
And the Lord of the Rings soundtrack. And I completely fell in love with that musically. Like, I still haven't seen the Last of the Mohicans, but I've seen the Lord of the Rings movies. But I was like, oh my gosh, that music is amazing. And I heard Tin Whistle and the Lord of the Rings soundtrack, which I later learned was the amazing playing from Alan Doherty. And I was like, wow, this is so cool. And so then I looked up the Swallowtail Jig along with those themes on YouTube. And YouTube opened the gates and was like, here is this amazing genre. And my mom had world music albums, so there are a couple Irish tracks on those, but YouTube was the main source of this music. And so basically there was no trad in my area at all for a 40 or 50 minute drive. And that happened, there's a session once a month in a pub called Grog's with the Friends of the Folklore Society.
Great pub
in
name.
Fresno. Yes. Like and it was very cool. Like, it was quite authentic feeling and everything. But these were people that my dad knew because he's into choral singing. And so a couple of the members of the band Pipe on the Hob went to the session and are like, oh, yeah, you can come along. And so I went to that session for, man, a few years, and it was lovely. And I also went to sessions at a little French restaurant called Le Bon Jure, and that was my first session ever in 2015. So I kind of restarted my, or officially started my Tin Whistle career in 2014 after hearing those soundtracks and spending time on YouTube. And I got a Clark whistle and eventually a Walton's, and then moved up to a Dixon and got a Dixon Low D in 2015. But yeah, the people in the Fresno area were just so welcoming and encouraging. And I just fell in love with the music and also the session vibe. And in 2017, I went to a Celtic teen camp, which I was like, how is there even such a thing? Yeah. And it was run by the Community Music School of Santa Cruz. And like, that was incredible. And oh, sorry, I forgot. I went to the Lark in the Morning World Music Camp. And that's in Northern California. So that was 2016. And I met the incredible David Brewer. At that time, he was a part of the Fire Scottish Band, and I think they're Grammy nominated as well, and they're just incredible. But he was my teacher for, I think, like 3 years, but we would only meet in person once a year, and he'd give me a couple little ornaments or some one-on-one advice, and my style was definitely influenced by his during that time. And then over time, I listened to so much music and so many artists that played all sorts of instruments that my style has evolved to whatever it is now. But yeah, the Community Music School of Santa Cruz, they had that teen camp and they had the Redwood camp, which is the adult version. And I went to the teen camp until 2019. And then in 2020, we all know what happened there. And then in 21, I came here to Ireland, and I've been based here ever since. And so I go back and forth between California and Ireland, and I visit once or twice a year. But I came here for the music, and I'm absolutely, like, overwhelmed in a good way of how much music there is, but also the quality of musicians as well, and the concerts and the camps and everything. It's just, I'm so spoiled. So I made the right choice, it feels. But yeah, it back in California, there are options if you drive very far, thanks to my dad for driving 9 hours that one time to the Lark in the Morning camp. So yeah, it's just amazing. It's a great hotspot for trad, and there are some really talented musicians in California. So I'm very, very lucky.
Well, that's lovely that you kind of like are so into it. You kind of in so many ways have like gone to the motherland of the tradition, you know?
Yes.
That's really cool. And I love that. I don't know if I'm drawing connections and conclusions that are not there. Feel free to tell me I'm making up stories here. But it seems to me, as you're talking about this, and I have here on my computer the cover for Harmonies, just in case I need some inspiration as we talk. And I'm seeing the artwork there, and there are the birds, and I'm thinking of that first track that opens with the bird song, and I'm thinking of the swallowtail jig, and it feels kind of like a lot of things are coming together and making sense, you know,
yes.
in a way.
Yeah. The first track, Sonnet of Daylight, you're right about like that kind of energy, because that was recorded in California. It was actually recorded right outside of my parents' house, my home, for 20 years. So we have this incredible dawn chorus of tons of different varieties of birds.
Were all those birds from the same place?
Yep.
Wow.
One recording.
I would have assumed, Cedar, that these were like lots of individual samples brought together from different places.
No, yeah, it was just one recording on a Zoom microphone. And I did start with some fake bird sounds. I mean, like, I put some whistle-made bird sounds in there. So I'd basically take the head off of the whistle and kind of make some birdish sounds with those. Do I have one around here? But yeah, like, basically I'd take the head off and then just make this little whistly sound. So I think it's been a while since I listened, so I think I start with the fake birds.
Really? Have fun.
And then the real birds come in. So that massive wall of sound of birds, those are real. Mm-hmm. And then before then is just taking the whistle head off and kind of moving it around and making the sounds. Like, I probably have a whistle around here that...
Let's see if it'll come through.
Yeah. There we go. Let's see if this... So it's like, yeah, you take the head off and then you kind of blow through it and you cover your finger over the opening of the, like, where the whistle's body connects to the head.
Yeah.
And you cover about halfway and you can make all these really cool bird sounds.
Interesting.
So part of the idea of harmonies was to make as many sounds as I could with the whistle itself while incorporating it with nature as well. So for Sonnet of Daylight, they're the fake whistle bird sounds that fade into the real birds, and then the music comes in.
That's so cool, because part of what I still am having fun with that track, but it was, you know, there's never, just like with books and movies and stuff, there's never anything quite like the first time, you know, that you experience a piece of media. As I was listening to it the first time, just trying to find, like, I knew that whistles would come up eventually, you know? And so I thought I was listening for the first instance of a whistle as these birds are singing, but I'd already heard whistles. I just didn't know it because they were that convincing. I thought it was bird song.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
That's really fun. I love that you say that you were trying to make other sounds with the whistle, that, like, nature sounds, because I did wonder sometimes, I'm trying to think of which ones, probably track 3, Shoreline of Serenity, maybe Song of the Desert as well. I did wonder if some of the wave sounds or wind sounds might possibly be generated by you. Is that the case, or was I guessing wrong?
Yeah. For Shoreline Serenity, I'm pretty sure, yes, I had some whistle wind and waves. So basically I blow across the window of the low C whistle and try to make kind of wave sounds with it. And I also would blow in a very particular way over the window and get almost like seagull-y sounds. So somewhat bird whistly sounds. So those really high, squeaky, whistly sounds were made by the whistle as well. And then I did have some waves come in and out throughout the piece. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's another example of using the whistle as and kind of a natural sound.
Mm-hmm.
And that came up in Rain Rhythm as well. Yeah.
Go ahead. Tell me about that one. I'd love to hear about that one, Cedar.
Yeah. So for the first, like, about minute, it's only finger taps. So I tap on the whistles, the whistle holes.
Yeah.
And it makes that really cool clicking sound. So, like, I don't know if you can hear that there.
Yeah, that little...
Yeah.
I thought it was like something being like, I don't know what word to use, plinked. I thought...
plinking and plinking. I like that word. Yeah.
I had not thought of that on the whistle holes. That makes sense, though. How cool.
basically would like pick a couple of the notes that were more musically accurate to the piece that follows. But yeah, basically was just doing finger taps, and then I think I was like scraping and tapping on the actual metal part of the whistle, the body, to make all these layers to mimic rain. And then eventually the rain sound gets faded in with the finger taps.
And I recorded that. Oh yeah, that's exactly what I was going to ask you.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead. Yeah, I recorded that at Bushy Park, and I live very close to Bushy, and it's an amazing spot because it feels more like a natural temperate rainforest, like how Ireland is supposed to be. Mm. And so I went and recorded the rain there, and I actually filmed a little video to go along with it and filmed most of it over there. So yeah, I was incorporating the whistle and the rain into one, and they both fade into each other until the rain becomes the prominent audio, and then the whistles come back towards the end.
Hey friends, thanks for tuning in. I always hesitate to do these little like commercial break things over music from the artists that are being interviewed. I just hate getting in the way of it. So like to that end, I'll be quick, but also be sure to check out this album. There'll be a link to it. And actually, Cedar did this interview with me a long time ago. She's been really awesome and patient about the release schedule because partly because I have hope still to be able to do a version of this interview with another project too, and hopefully thereby promote her work a little bit extra too, especially in thanks to her for being so patient for the release of this episode. But since doing this interview, Cedar has put out more music, and it's all awesome. So the giveaway this time, I'm going to go ahead and roll the dice in the Cthulhu Dice Tower here and see which supporter is going to win some of Cedar's music. But what I'm going to do this time is reach out and just ask which of her albums the winner would like to have. That's kind of the way we'll run it this time. This one, I know I mentioned in the interview, but listen, if you haven't listened to this album yet on headphones, let me just super duper suggest doing so. It's really awesome. Anyway, here we go. Oh, 17. Gonna have to re-roll that one. Here we go. 8. That's gonna be Ted Garvin. Ted, thank you so much for supporting the show. Thank you all for supporting the show. If you want to support the show, there are links in the show notes. Let me get out of the way. Thank you again. Have a lovely day. Thank you to Cedar. Check out her music and her art and everything else she's working on, including the unicycling and the mermaiding and whatever other fun talents and hobbies she's probably picked up since having done this interview as well. I'm sure it's all really awesome and out there on her social medias and stuff like that. Links in the show notes. Thanks. Have a lovely day. Not that you're asking me to choose a favorite track. And I always feel a little bit awkward about this kind of thing, Cedar, because like I don't know if I feel compelled somehow to tell an artist what I, you know, like what is meaningful to me about their work or what, you know, but like there's no reason to have to pick a favorite track, of course, and you know, I'd rather be able to listen to all of them, but I feel like this compulsion to like, well, if I had to choose just one, which one would I choose? And I think for me personally, it would probably be Rain Rhythm. I did really like cool. That track a lot. I like all the tracks, you know, but and I've been trying to think why it is, and I wonder if part of it is that I get the feeling with that track that there is a rhythm that I'm only getting glimpses of, you know, because it's kind of like maybe with the whistle music specifically, especially when there's any kind of harmony, like it becomes more clear to maybe the musically trained part of my brain, you know, and so I can kind of tap into it, but it kind of fades in and out with those nature sounds and stuff. And so it's almost like, I don't know, it's like watching for a whale to surface. It's somewhere under the water even when I can't see it, you know, but then it comes up and that's really exciting, you know, maybe that kind of experience.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and it is the only track that does have a consistent rhythm, because when I was making this album, I was like, yeah, I think I can put something that's a little more musical or like, you know, that is more rhythmic. And yeah, I've definitely experimented with some things with that, but there's some syncopation and a few key changes as well, and I change whistles quite often. and layered it and experimented with delay and created Brain Rhythm that way. But that's cool that you like it. It's a fun track, and I wanted to create that sense of space as well with rain, because you can be standing at a lake and you can just see the surface of it with all the drips, and you're just kind of in it, you know. When you're in rain, it's everywhere. So it was really fun to make that, and it'd be cool to make a Dolby Atmos version of that. But I did make a Dolby Atmos version of Shoreline Serenity for my dissertation for my bachelor's degree. So that is available to purchase on my Patreon. There's an ambulance going by.
I'll make sure that there is a link to your Patreon and to the album and to everything else we talk about for sure in the show notes for this episode.
Cool, great. Thanks. Yeah, the Patreon, it hasn't been as successful because I haven't properly gotten it off the ground yet, but I do have the shop, and that's open to anyone. But the shop has Shoreline Serenity, an immersive experience. So basically this is a 15-ish minute long video of all original sound design, music, and footage of the ocean, basically, from the shoreline perspective. So I have snippets of the whistle tracks, the whistle stems, and a fully designed ocean sound design kind of wash underneath it. And I used the Dolby Atmos option mixer in Logic to create this sense of space, so it's more 3D. And each clip has been completely redone with the sound, so none of the original audio footage is available. So it was all recorded at different locations around Dublin, around the coasts here, and then edited to reflect what you're looking at. And one thing that is featured in that track, I mean that project, as well as I think every track in my album, are animal sounds not made by animals.
Okay.
So basically I create animal sounds as well. That's kind of like a hidden talent. So in a lot of the tracks, I have my own voice as the animals.
Really?
So, yeah.
I never would have guessed. Even in that last track, I think it's in Harmonies of Nature. Maybe it's actually in Song of the Desert, now I think of it. But I think it's in the last track. There's what I thought was a coyote at one point.
You
tell me that was you.
Yep.
That's awesome. Well done, because I never would have guessed that was a person.
So basically, growing up in the forest, I don't know why, but I've always been drawn to kind of mimicking animals and just to feel a bit closer to them, because I love nature so much. And so I think from a young age, I tried to mimic animals, and I love that. It's so fun. It doesn't really come up in day-to-day life, but
maybe
you
kind of
some
have to
of
make
my
it
friends,
come up in day-to-day life,
don't yeah. you? Yeah, it seems like it. But some of my friends over here still comment on it.
Yeah.
And at the pub, sometimes it would come up. But
little trick to do.
Basically, yeah. So basically, I wanted to make the album as original as I could, and didn't really need to pay to have sounds, you know, real ones. Right. I just wanted to challenge myself. And so in several of the tracks, I have, these animal sounds that are me. And so in Harmonies of Nature, that's where you can hear most of them. So there are wolves, owls, horses, coyotes,
you did all of these,
a roadrunner. Yeah, and I just was making the sounds myself, so that was really fun. And as well as Playful Forest Spirits, the nighttime one, all the crickets are me as well.
No way, really?
And, yeah. So basically, I would make the sound and then EQ so I can cut as much low end off.
Oh, and yeah.
Yeah, and then I would stack them, and sometimes I'd pitch shift a slight bit just to give a little more contrast.
Sure, then and it sounds like different crickets and not just the same cricket,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but it's basically like you're screaming, but you put a little bit of a buzz on it. Because I can't whistle very well, so I just used a very high range
Wait a minute, Cedar. You're telling me that you... The person who can make a lot of impressive sounds, but it also is a very accomplished whistle player, can't whistle very well?
Yeah, I don't know why.
It seems like a cruel trick of nature that you of all people wouldn't be able to whistle very well.
Yeah, it's so weird. I try so many times and I look really weird when I whistle as well, and I just can't do it for some reason. So I just use a very high range of my voice to make up for it. But it's quite ironic, yeah. But yeah, so it's really fun. I also with the ocean sounds for Shoreline Serenity, the seagulls in there, I made those as well, and a lot of the bird sounds, and studied different seabirds and did my best to make that.
I would have thought, and it wouldn't have taken away from the music, that there would have been like a sample library you'd be pulling from for these things, you know? And so then, find out that you captured the recordings that were captured in nature yourself. Well, that hadn't been the case, it wouldn't have taken away from the music, but that kind of adds something to it. It's special.
Mm.
But now to find out how many of these noises you were generating yourself, this is very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. I love challenges. Like, mountain unicycling is very, very challenging in a great way. It's very fun. And mermaiding has its own challenges. And then I challenge myself with the animal sounds, and music has its own challenges as well, and like limitations with the whistle, but you can actually push the whistle very far in certain ways.
Yeah.
But I just am drawn to challenges, apparently. But this was a fun project to kind of practice at these things.
I wonder, and again, feel free to tell me if I'm making connections that aren't there, but I guess when you talked about how you swim differently when mermaiding, you know, which makes sense, you know, I think about how I swim. Of course, I haven't tried it with a monotail on before, but I can imagine how it might be different. I remember reading in the Once and Future King, that's about it's a King Arthur story, about when Merlin turned young Arthur into a fish. And now he didn't know what to do. And, you know, Merlin is trying to explain to him how to kind of like, what did they call it? Jackknife or, you know, how to swim as a fish, you know, and just how that's different, and how Arthur had to figure out that, like, oh, it's like flying underwater. It's just like this interesting kind of like new experience thing you get to experience as a reader working through it, you know? And I do wonder, like, maybe I'm ignorant about, different whistle music genres and options, right? But to me, this album is really, really unique. Like, if nothing else, it's certainly unique to what I've heard. It's, if someone had said to me, Cedar Dobson, she's done a whistle album, I would have expected a lot of jigs and reels, you know? And I'm sure that would have been great, but, you know, this is really unique, at least to my listening experience.
Aww, thank you.
And I wonder if maybe, have you put any thought into this, or do you feel like maybe having had a lot of, I mean, I'm saying this flippantly, right, but like having had a lot of like weird experiences, you know, where like you've learned how to unicycle and learned how to swim like a mermaid, and if you're just like drawn to doing things differently, has that informed the fact that you made music like this on this album, you know?
Yeah, I'd say so. Like, I don't know why, but I've always had this kind of goal to do things differently. But I guess with my values, my main thing is I always want to stay true to myself. And so I've taken this to heart, and I've kept this goal all the time through my whole life, which meant losing a lot of friends because they would change so drastically that I couldn't even relate to them anymore. Mm. And one day in school, this was like seventh grade.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like 13?
Yeah, 12, 13, or 12, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember crying after school one day. I said, I can't take it anymore. I can't relate to anybody. They've all changed. Mm. And so basically I went, that was the best decision I made, basically. And I went homeschooled, and that's how I met some wonderful people, including my music teacher, John Kilburn, who has taught me a huge amount of what I know now. And I actually haven't seen him for 4 years because of lockdown, and we're based in different countries. He's in Brazil, but we're finally going to meet in July. So that'll be amazing.
Oh,
but, yeah, so basically, I didn't want to change, and so that meant, you know, getting out of the public school scene, and then getting into the unknown, but it was the great unknown because I learned that there are a lot of unique people who don't fit in this public school vibe, you know, including some, yeah, lovely friends that I have now, and people that were just so unique and creative, and it let me have space away from public school so I can kind of focus on music, basically. And so it was at that point, not too long after, I think 6 months or so, when I connected with John and started my music training outside of school. And so I learned way more musically outside of school than in school. And in high school, I started to learn a bit more music, and I had electives, and they were all music, and I got my best grades my senior year because I had three music classes, and
when
they were wonderful.
You can take classes you like, you get good grades,
yeah.
Huh?
Exactly, yeah. And so, like, long story short, I guess the main thing is I want to be myself all the time, so even if that means losing friends and jumping into the unknown, it has ultimately been way better for me. And so with this album, it's my first one, and I was like, yeah, I think I want to just start with a meditation or natural vibe album because it's so important to me. Like back home, the nature was always there. And when I would feel stressed or when I would go play music, I was always in nature. And it was just always there, so welcoming. And so this was kind of a love letter to the nature and to combine whistle with nature and try and cross them over as closely as I could. And so this is, yeah, I guess a unique album in that way, and that it's not trad, because even though I love trad so much, you know, you can do a ton on the tin whistle, and I've come to learn that it's very possible to do blues and jazz and rock and several genres on the whistle. But for this one, yeah, it's definitely more focused on nature and meditation, relaxation. And I've had some incredibly beautiful, heartwarming comments of how it's affected people and how they use it in therapy sessions.
And that makes sense.
For healing and for just releasing stress. And that's what I would do in nature as well. And, you know, go out and play whistle in the nature. So yeah, it's just been so wonderful to see how it's affected people and to see where it's gone. And people have bought it all over the place. And I just have really been happy to meet the people who have appreciated it, you know? So I just wanted to do my own thing. And even though it's different, I was like, yeah, I still want to do this. And I made it happen myself. Like, that's what I'm learning these days, is if I want to do things, I got to get it done myself, or at least to start putting the groundwork down, and then the rest will flow easier. So I recorded this with my friends in September of 22. And then the next month it was released. So I worked really hard on it. Yeah, I wasn't in college at that point. It was like a transition point from second year to third year. So I was like, yeah, I want to get this done. But with the help of my friends at the in Ballyfermot, they recorded that for me, and then I sat down on my computer and did all the production and animal sounds and stuff right here in Tumbalog, and got the CDs printed in the States. Yeah, and now I have tons of copies, and I know CDs, some people can't play them, but they get it for the novelty.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're in a weird in-between time when it's kind of dying out, but not quite. It's, like, barely hanging on,
yeah.
Like, physical copies. But I do have it on Bandcamp, and that's another reason why I, like, my ethics get in the way a lot in, like, Spotify, learning about streaming platforms in college and how they don't pay musicians or,
mm-hmm.
you know, it could be a bit, not very great for musicians. That's why I have it on Bandcamp, because it supports the musician directly, and that's why I like to kind of look for music on Bandcamp.
On not Spotify.
When I can.
Yes.
I used to listen to Spotify, and then I learned about that. I'm like, oh, wow. So the
Never
artist
again.
Actually doesn't get much. Yeah. So yeah, if I can, I would totally go to Bandcamp first to support artists, and that's where my album is at the moment. So even though it's not really out there much, at least it's got one place to be digitally. But it can be difficult just with trying to determine what to do, like if it should be on streaming platforms or not, or YouTube. But yeah, all sorts of things. I went buried down the rabbit hole, but it's all related.
That's why I wanted to. Yeah, that's exactly why I wanted to hear you talk. I want this. This is everything. and the challenge for me is is getting out of the way, because almost everything you say, I want to ask you more about it. You know,
but
I am curious too about the album artwork. Did you know with the galaxies and stars and planets up above, and harmonies incorporating the moon and the birds and butterflies, and I think are these chakras the colors that are running up the body there? Did you do the artwork yourself, or did you have a friend do it? Or
yeah. So I'm a visual artist as well, and my parents, well, my mom's side, they're very artistic. So my grandma, or Nona, since we're I'm an eighth Sicilian, and so Nona is kind of Sicilian for grandma, I guess.
Oh, gotcha.
But she's an incredible artist, and she does pine needle baskets. She paints my grandpa, or we call him Papa, my Papa's wood carvings. And so he's made Native American wood carvings and Old World Santas. And then my Nona paints them. And they're both incredible artists. And my Nona does stained glass and watercolor and everything. She's super talented. And my Papa as well, incredibly talented at wood carving and pottery. They had a pottery studio together. When was that? Like the 80s or so? And that was near Yosemite. And so they would make a lot of their money off of the pottery. And so basically, I feel like it was kind of genetically passed down, but I could be wrong. And because my mom is also a fantastic artist, and then myself and my sibling are artists as well. And so I, over the years, like I did mostly like 2D drawing. And so I would do a little bit of watercolor, but mostly like colored pencils. And I discovered black paper and white pencil, and I just loved that. And so that was around 2017. And I loved it so much that I just couldn't stop drawing all these beautiful, like, I loved the idea that it's inverted. And so you draw the lights instead of the shadows, because traditionally you would do it the other way around. And I found it way more interesting to draw that way.
Speaking of doing things differently. It's like, oh, I can draw, but the opposite way. Cedar does.
Yeah.
That's what Cedar's going to do right there. Yeah.
Yep, I guess so. That's spot on. Yeah. And so basically, I just loved that so much. And we did competitions, and my sibling and myself have won a few competitions growing up, including this kind of high school. Well, actually, it was high school and before that. We won it a few times. It was for the Ansel Adams Gallery. It was run by Yosemite National Park. And so we had a few pieces that were hung up there. And one year I drew a mountain lion, and it took maybe 12 hours to draw. And it's full color, a portrait of a mountain lion. And that won first place and was featured on the Yosemite website and on Facebook official, which was really cool.
That's awesome.
But that kind of style, I just fell in love with completely. And I basically was like, yeah, I would really love to have like that style represented for harmonies for the front cover. Mm. And so basically, for the artwork, I drew a bunch of birds on black paper. And then I would take pictures and bring them into one main Pixelmator document and would place them where I wanted them and do a little bit of touch-ups to make them pop a bit more, because that's very difficult, is to properly take a good picture of black paper because it gets a glare on it.
Oh, sure. That makes sense.
Yeah. But if you work with it and you up the contrast and boost the brightness, it kind of pops a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So I included animals from kind of different parts of the world, because there's a snowy owl on there, which isn't where I'm from, but I felt like it was important to include. Even though I don't have a wintry one, I wanted to somewhat represent the owl. And even though the owl is, you know, that owl isn't native to any of these tracks, I still include owls in it. And I have a raven in there and a stelgia, and they are very common in California. And you hear Sellers Jays in the Sonnet of Daylight track in the last one, Harmonies of Nature.
Mm.
I also have an Irish or a European robin in there, and finches, and put some butterflies in because I love butterflies.
Because why not, right?
Yeah. Even though the colors aren't accurate, I wanted to kind of add a lot of color because there's so much color in nature, and it's just amazing, just the vibrancy. And I love saturation and love saturating photos and everything because color is so exciting. And so then, yeah, those are the birds and the insects, and then the grass, which I absolutely love laying in the grass. It was one of my favorite things to do growing up. And then the figure in the middle with the chakras. My family were into kind of like alternative things, but also
I believe you. You know,
yeah, we all want peace for everybody, and like this unity consciousness. So part of this vibe as well is like the person's in the middle and the animals are around flying up to the universe. And so it's kind of drawing a circle in a way.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So it's kind of showing like, oh, yeah, we're all part of this wild ride of life, you know. And so the chakras are there kind of to represent the meditation album vibe, but it's also more nature as well. So it's not strictly meditation. But yeah, it's kind of showing the unity of nature and kind of just beautiful life force everywhere. So yeah, that's the front cover.
And way to go, like generating every single aspect of this whole project. That's also very cool.
Aw, thanks.
I have nothing against artists like having just like a simple photo of themselves for an album cover. Like that's totally fine. But I do think it's fun to find out when an artist has put work and thought into their album artwork. I think it's a lot of fun to hear them talk about their reasons and methods and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's so fun. I love art and creativity. And the last little part of that is the font is mine as well. So I had this font template and I would write in all my letters and then put it in. And so I could type in my own font. Yeah. So it feels more natural for me. But one of the biggest like goals that I have is to always encourage people to be creative, even though they think they might not be able to. I'm like, oh, everyone can. Like, they have all these limiting beliefs that they won't be good at it, which I understand because I've been there as well. But, like, it's just so important to do something creative and to express yourself somehow.
Mm.
And, like, I still have places that I want to explore. Like, I don't really sing, but I feel like I would enjoy it. And I haven't really written any songs, but I would like to, because I have all sorts of feelings about things that I want to express. And like, that could be one way to express it, because I express myself in different ways with a whistle, because the whistle is my voice, basically. And woodwinds, I'm just so drawn to woodwinds because of that. But yeah, I can definitely explore with the voice at some point. But yeah, definitely creativity is super, super important to me. It's my whole life. And to share that joy with someone else, or for them to discover their own creative voice, is really important to me. So
I wonder if what aspects there are here that are things that I can't understand in my head, but they come across, like I can feel them, you know, like they come across it all the same. I'm in a lot of ways on the other end of the spectrum from you, Cedar, in that I'm like, I'm debilitated by self-consciousness a lot. I'm terrified of being true to myself. That sounds terrifying to me. I'm being a little hyperbolic here for comedy, but for comedy's sake, but for reals, it is a little bit hard. And so it's lovely to kind of see this modeled so well. I do wonder, like, a lot of the music that I've done has been bagpipes, and I have a lot of friends and family who will get enthusiastic about bagpipes and have a bagpipe album, that I, as a person who plays bagpipes, kind of wish that they had a different album, just because it's like not very good. It doesn't feel like it's really great quality. You know, it's kind of very kind of kitschy, touristy kind of bagpipe music, you know? And, you know, nothing against the artists that made that. Somebody made it, and good for them, you know? But I don't know. There's something plasticky about it. There's something that doesn't feel very real about it. I wonder if I'm similarly ignorant of, I don't know, the meditation music genre or nature sound or like soundscapes. You know, maybe I don't. I'm sure I don't know about that kind of work, but I feel like probably I have encountered meditation music and soundscapes that were kind of kitschy and kind of touristy, kind of plastic, you know. And this album isn't that, you know. It even though I'm not in that tradition, you know. Like, I don't know why I like it. I really like it. Something real about it. And so as far as like being true to yourself and making something that's real, I think you've pulled it off. It's really good. Thanks. I like this a lot.
Aw, thank you.
I do want to also plug listening to it with headphones. I kind of did that almost by accident the first time, and I'm sure glad I did. So if anybody listening either hasn't listened to the album before or has listened to it but not yet done it with headphones, I just thought the mixing that you did really that like upped it yet another level. It just it was like delicious to listen to in that way.
Thank you. Yeah. I totally get it with the plasticky stuff, because I really enjoy meditation music, but like true stuff, like the real stuff, because there can be so many fake MIDI instruments.
Yeah. And that's probably part of it. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes. And then that can be a bit frustrating because it doesn't sound real to me. Like, I understand like people want to try and make it with what they have, and they may not be able to play that instrument.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like, I love Indian flute, like from India, the bansuri, because it's so highly expressive and absolutely stunning. And to put like a tempura behind it, it's like, oh, really amazing.
Mm.
But I also love lots of textures. And so there have been a couple meditation tracks I've come across that are very textural in like a natural way, or they have like sparkly sounds, but they're not like they're not cheesy at all, because they sound natural.
Yeah.
But yeah, I totally get it. Like, some of the pipe stuff, and even in trad, sometimes you do get that kind of, plasticky sound. Mm-hmm. And you wonder how that happened, but it depends what your taste is and everything, and that music can serve a purpose, but I think we just prefer the real deal.
Yeah. Well, as far as real deals go, this is the real deal. I'll plug it forever. I think this is a really great album.
You. Aw, thanks.
And Cedar, I feel like there have been a couple times that you've said really beautiful things that I think will be like really fitting kind of spots to kind of fade out of the interview and maybe into like a final sort of sample of from the album. And so like I keep hesitating because I don't want to miss the beautiful stop for because I want so much to ask you even more questions. You know, like at some point, you know, I got to let it be and maybe I can convince you to come and talk to me again someday.
Yeah, for sure.
But there is one question that I guess is just I can't quite get it out of my head. I am curious if you have noticed different nature sounds in Ireland now that you've been over there for a couple of years. I'm reminded of a classical composer whose name I can't remember, who did a whole suite about birdsong that to me doesn't sound like birds at all. But I had a music teacher who told me that it does sound like birds in the UK. It sounds like English birds. And
yes.
That's why it didn't sound like birds to me, because I've never been there, you know? And I still haven't been there, so I trust her. I believe her that she was right, you know? And I wonder if being in a new place, if you have especially the ears for it, if you're getting new ideas because you're surrounded by new kinds of nature, you know, nature new to you, I mean, you know?
Yeah, for sure. That's a great question. Yeah, when I came here, that was one of the first things I realized. I was like, oh, wow, I'm going to learn all these different birds, especially birds, but all these different animals and trees. I'm still not up to date with my trees, because if I were back home, I'm like, yep, that's this. But then when I'm over here, I'm like, oh, I've got to learn what all these trees are.
I'm glad to know, as a person named Cedar, that you are properly committed to knowing the names of the trees. That's good. It feels right.
I do my best. Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, I just love it. But yeah, when I came here, I was like, wow, they're very different birds. And so we've got magpies over here and lots of birds in the crow family. So magpies, jackdaws, hooded crows, rooks, and the jay. Mm. And the jay is very rare over here. And we actually saw one a couple weeks ago when my parents were visiting. And we were in the Japanese garden part of the Powers Court Gardens, which are stunningly beautiful. Mm. And my dad's like, oh, look, a bird. And I look over, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's a jay. And I actually captured it on camera. It was amazing.
Was it the first that you'd seen and your dad happened to just spot it like as a whim while you have fun?
Exactly. Yes. Oh, look, that's cool. I'm like, I've been trying to see that for a long time.
Was that garden where I remember not too long ago you put out a video where you were playing whistle under like a kind of vegetation tunnel?
That was really cool. That was actually during a rhododendron hike. So that's in Howth, which is a super special part of Dublin. That is just really special to me because that is one of the first places. No, it is the first place of 2021 where I actually went to a session. And it was outside at the Martello Tower. And I have this photo that's going to be on the front cover of my next album. I have to get it retaken, though, because it's in black and white. But it's going to be a full-color photo of me unicycling with my whistle at the Martello Tower. And so...
What a perfect just, like, bringing together of all these things. That's awesome.
Yeah, and so that'll be the cover, but Howth, that's where that was filmed, is a stunning rhododendron hike. Like, right now, I don't know about right now, but a couple weeks ago, it was, like, the peak time for it, because there were, like, 100-plus rhododendrons that you would walk through and under, and the ground was completely covered in the flowers. Mm. And so that video was basically the exit point from the walk to the high view, where you can see a huge amount of Dublin from that point. And basically, I was just like, oh, I want to record a tune here. And my boyfriend filmed that beautiful spot. But I guess what tying in with the birds and nature and everything, that's what's so wonderful about this place, is that there are so many parks to escape to, because it is a city, and I am surprised how well I've adapted to the city, but it can be a bit overwhelming and loud. And so going to the rhododendron walk is very refreshing, or Bushy Park, which is right next to me, is super refreshing because I can be in the nature. And so, like, all these beautiful birds and the robin as well, like, really blew me away because the European robin is very small. It has a red chest, but it's completely different than the American robin, which is a lot more like the blackbird over here, which is a very similar shape. Even the calls are very similar. The sounds they make. Yeah, they chirp a lot alike, and some of their calls are very similar. So I'm like, huh, that's very interesting. So now I'm kind of comparing the birds, especially from California to here.
Yeah.
And it's great because I love pigeons, and I used to raise pigeons. So that's another weird thing. But there are a lot of beautiful pigeons here, and I get to see them because I had pigeons for 10 years. And basically, there's this one pigeon I had named Cody, and on the Tradify album, there's an original track of mine, and one of the tunes is called Cody's Frolics. That tune was written for him. So he was a very special, unique pigeon, and he wouldn't really want to stay around the other pigeons. He'd fly up to the house when he would hear us, and I would play tunes, and he'd stand on my head listening. And then he would sometimes try to groom my hair when I'm playing whistle, and he would just hang around the house for hours. And I'm like, Cody, you need to, like, eat and drink. And so then we'd have to, like, encourage him to fly back to the pigeons so he can replenish himself. And he would just hang out at the house for hours when we'd play music or we'd just socialize. So that's that was really a tune cool. for him. Yeah. And it's been a few years. Like, he passed away somehow. Like, we didn't have an aviary, so I don't know exactly what happened. But, like, he was very special and, like, a pretty important part of my music career as well, because I used to practice a lot when he was there and named this tune after him. So, like, the nature is always there. It's always a big part of my life. And seeing the pigeons here reminds me of Cody and the pigeons that I used to raise, which connects to the music. And so it's all just very hand in hand. And so I'm definitely inspired over here to make more music, like to write original tunes with Irish themes, but like not just standard Irish names, but like things that are very particular, like very particular experiences or things that I've come across that relate to the music. And so I'm actually planning my second album right now, but it is a trad album.
I'm sure it's going to be excellent. I'm very excited for that.
Oh, thanks. It's basically, this is my 10th year playing whistle, like, officially. And so I was like, yeah, I really want to get an album out. And so things have come up to delay it. Like, my phone was stolen. Like,
oh, no.
When was that? Last month. So that threw things off. And then my parents came to visit. So we spent as much time as we could together. And things would just come up and delay it. But I have it all planned. I'm getting the ball rolling, getting the musicians lined up. So basically, it's called Cedar Dobson Decade. And it's reflecting on the most important, influential tunes of the 10 years of playing. And so I hope to aim for 14 tracks. That might be a little too much, maybe 12. And I'm getting them all arranged. Some are more arranged than others, but they are each and every tune is super special in its own way. And I could tell you, you know, a whole story for every tune. And I feel like that is an important part of the genre to me and to others, is how special this music is to us, and that it has so much meaning. And I want to just share my love for the genre with other people. So I think that's one major goal that I have in general, is like, share all the fun things with everyone, because I would love other people to experience how lovely the genre is, but also not just music, but other hobbies and interests. But yeah, this album, it's in the works. I'm working on it every day, trying to get the ball rolling.
Well, that's very exciting. No pressure or anything, but maybe when it comes out, if we can find a time, I'd love to hear the story behind every track. Maybe we could
I'd love to.
That one. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
And I wonder
that'd be fun.
I don't want to take the focus off of harmonies, of course, but I wonder, like, would it feel like at all jarring if we were to go out on Cody's Frolics? Yeah, Cody's Frolics.
Oh, to put that track in it. Yeah,
yeah, we
could
pull
do
that track
yeah.
in. And I'll make sure we have a link to the Tratify album as well, which is called Take Flight, which also feels very
yep.
thematic with everything
yeah.
we've been talking about. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, we'll do
yeah.
that then.
Cool. Yeah, links to both would be really great. The Tratify album was recorded in Windmill, and I kind of snuck our band in as, yeah, it's for an assignment. No, it was.
Yeah.
I did have some assignments, but I was able to record the whole album there during my final year of college and used a couple of tracks for assignments.
Mm-hmm.
And then that became the Tratify album. And those are our own arrangements of Irish tunes as well as Galician and Asturian music, along with two originals. And a few other originals from other people in the genre, such as Mike McGoldrick. And we also have The Road to Aragi and I forget his name, Adam something. But, you know, a couple contemporary tunes and traditional. So we kind of blend the two. And that was a fun album to produce. And that came out almost a year ago already. That's crazy.
Mm.
But that's one of my favorite things to do is produce albums. And I feel like the degree I have is, yeah, that was a pretty good choice because I learned a lot about the technical aspects, but also the creative aspects of making albums become real.
Mm.
And I'm just so excited to get my album going because I get to be back in that world again of just creating this unique thing. It's definitely gonna be unique. There are gonna be some unique effects in there and arrangement kind of creative things going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's gonna be fun.
I've got to imagine that it's useful to be a person who is both interested in like being behind the instrument and also behind the mixing board. You know, like if you have an idea of what's going on in both worlds, and maybe especially you're interested in it, you get joy from it, then that makes sense that it would come together to make a kind of a holistically created final product in a lot of ways.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. All steps are quite fun. Of course, there are challenges that come up, like with engineering, there can be things that are a little stressful or you have time limitations, but then once you get the audio, then you can relax a bit and work with it and make something cool.
Mm.
But yeah, it's just so fun. So working on getting that set up while I'm also gigging in the Temple Bar area, which is also fun, mostly, because I get to play for tourists and there are people like me who come over and they just love something or more than one thing about Ireland, and a lot of them really appreciate the music, and we get just really beautiful comments and interactions with people who are really like touched by the music, and it's just so cool. And there could be a couple weird things happening in the pubs, you know, just people that have had too much to drink or something, like
right.
That's just the less enjoyable part, but the most enjoyable part is just seeing how positive people feel about the music, and it's just so cool. But yeah, working on planning the album, and I'm going to do a little bit of like crowdfunding or pre-orders so I can properly pay the musicians, because I really value, you know, getting everyone well paid, and I really appreciate their time and their skills, because I'm not proficient on fiddle or anything, so I'd like really fantastic musicians to be a part of it. And so yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Maybe I can time it so it'll take me a little while to do the editing work here anyway, and so then if you have, I'll check with you before making this live, and then any kind of crowdfunding or pre-sales or anything like that might be going on, if they're happening by then, I'll add a little explanation or plug and have links to that as well.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, for sure.
And I hope to get that off the ground pretty soon, but
okay.
I'll keep in touch.
Yeah, and I'll check with you about it. So with, and as far as editing this goes, just so you know.